to show you something on the Mightier 1090. I want to show you something. I want you to hear something on the Mightier 1090. I want to show you something on YouTube. Most importantly, I want you to hear something on the podcast, okay? Pay close attention. If you're watching, pay even closer attention. I'm Browner. That's Lawhead. We are Browner and Lawhead on the Mightier 1090. I'm going to get that video to work at some point. The idea was to start the show with something that I thought was cool last night, and that was Peyton Manning doing his Peyton Manning thing. I found it to be very entertaining. I'm not really a big Eli guy, but the two of them together, super magic. You can find this magic right here on Apple Podcasts, on YouTube, and on any platform that has podcasts. All you have to do is search Kaplan and Crew. Browner and Lawhead are available on all those platforms. We start our show with the date number. That's all the difference you need. I would ask people to subscribe if you're on iTunes. I would ask people to subscribe, like, and share if you are on YouTube. Help us get paid, baby.
Hey, right?
If you're on the Mightier 1090, just suck it up. Enjoy the show. I know commercials. Stop messaging me about the commercials. I'm not in control of those, okay? So move on. Last night, comedy of errors. But the comedy, let's try this video one more time. The comedy came from this
can,
guy.
Three jet church. Here we go. Be alert on the weave here, right? One mid trip stripe bunch. H settle. 51 scat. H weave rail. Y line. Can, three jet church. Blue right, 20. Blue 20. Easy. Can.
What's the can mean?
He just canned it right there. Those are two plays I just caught. This helmet doesn't fit.
Shocking that a helmet doesn't fit you. Helmet. They didn't have a double XL helmet to fit that forehead.
that's great.
It is great.
That may have been the newest revelation in what we'll be looking at going forward when it comes to intaking live sports. I don't know if you can duplicate the success of what those two guys did, but Jason, did you get a chance to watch that?
You know, I didn't. I watched obviously some of the clips later on, what was posted and some different things. I wish I would have. I really do, and I will the next time when they offer that kind of a thing, because I've always liked the Mannings. Maybe not so much on the field. I've always liked Eli. I've always liked the way he just kind of stood into that New York media in the face of challenges in his whole career, in that sense on the field. But off the field, I mean, Peyton's always been funny. And these two guys, just on the clips I saw, they seem well trained at that. Like Peyton's kind of the goofball. Eli plays more of the straight man humor, and it's a very good team of comedy. When as a comedian myself, when you've seen comedy teams, their timing, the way they get the little jab in and then move on to the next guy, really well done, really good stuff. And you said. I agree, man. This could be something, you know, you got to get the right personalities. You got to, you know, it's like lightning in a bottle for a lot of things in entertainment or whatever you have. But those guys right now, if they're willing to do it and they're willing to get with, you know, writers and creators to keeping it fresh and finding ways to keep it lighthearted, they got endless possibilities, I think, of what they're doing.
I do not think that you need a writer room for this thing. I don't think you need a host for this thing. I think this thing works because Peyton Manning hosted SNL. Eli Manning, as vanilla as he was, he hosted SNL as well. So these guys, it's interesting Ed, from a comedic perspective that you can see the chemistry between the two of them and how they can make that work. Because Peyton has the ability to just kind of break the thing down and have it be fun. This isn't for the novice. This isn't for a person who doesn't know what a first down is. This isn't for them. It's for people like us who like watching the sport and know a little more deeper in detail and can have Peyton Manning, can have Eli, they can have that murderer Ray Lewis on. They can do all these things.
Yeah, you know, because there are going to be those certain references and there's those little things that the real novice fan knows, like what it's like to come out of a huddle, what it's like to be under center or at least put yourself in those positions to know what other quarterbacks. So the way Peyton was engineering that at like, you know, calling the audibles or, you know, which he was so famous for. We all know Omaha, right? I mean, it made that a legend. So I was really tickled by all the little posts and clips I saw of it. So I'm definitely tuning in next time. And I was just saying maybe get a writer or two just to help with, you know, different ways to keep maybe different scenarios fresh as the season drags. Let these two guys do their thing. There's no doubt.
Right.
Let them just be, you know, bantering and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, Peyton has always had that really funny comedic timing, really good sense of reading the room, so to speak, you know.
Because when they did this with Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football, a lot of people hated it. I liked it. I just thought his brand of humor was difficult to mesh with what was happening on a Monday Night Football, because there were a couple of blowouts where they would turn to him and go, okay, this is why you're here. And that's when he got in trouble, because that's not why you didn't bring him in to do stand-up. You brought him in to make funny comments about the game. And I thought they did this Miller a huge disservice, regardless of what I think of him personally.
Right. And I just think Dennis in that situation was a little, it felt a little forced, even though Dennis was being Dennis, it felt a little forced in the broadcast. And I just think he was just too highbrow and off the beaten path of sports to really get his footing, to really make that successful. And I just think it was, you know, you start off with Hank Williams Jr. and then you have singing, "Let's hear it, boom, 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 boom," and then you try to bring in, you know, one of the smartest highbrow comedians, you know, seconds later. I just don't think it matched. But Peyton being an ex-player, you know, with the pedigree of the Manning family and his brother in there and the way, you know, he's been able to kind of cement himself already as a kind of a personality that we love to see get around or talk serious about the game. So I'm definitely doing
it. Now, if you wonder what they were doing, calling this is what we saw at the very end of the game. That's Las Vegas exploding in very tiny figures of people, but this is in the rafters for those of you listening. This is a view from the rafters, looks to be the press box of the final touchdown that the Raiders scored that actually won the game. Now, how much of this game were you able to intake?
Not a lot. I had to actually ref some hoops last night, so I only got to see some of the last parts of the fourth quarter into the overtime.
Well, you saw the parts I want to talk about.
Okay.
A lot of people said that, the Raiders were great in this game. The Raiders won a great game. The game was great and entertaining from a standpoint of it was fun to watch. From a coaching standpoint, from a player standpoint, the Mannings watching the game, I think Ray Lewis at one point was like, Russell Wilson at one point was like, what are they doing? Because you have the game pretty much you thought you won it. You didn't win it. It's on the 1 yard line now. You come out, you try to do a quarterback sneak with a guy who has a bad back, apparently. That's not going to work. Then the next play, you jump off sides. And then the play after that, you throw a ball off a guy's hands and it's an interception. It's like the game took so many turns. And then Lamar Jackson gets the ball back. He fumbles the ball. The Raiders get the ball back. The play that they were going to run the field goal team out, that got a delay of game. And so then you had to bring out the Raiders offense to try to get 5 more yards. And they said, well, to the hell with that. Just throw it. Just get a touchdown. And it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's not a bad kind of recipe for the Raiders, is bring you down to a sloppy game level that we'll play. Penalties, mistakes, get you caught up in something like that. And I think that's probably be more successful type of approach against good football teams. Can we drag this team down to playing that sloppy style, unfundamental, take your head out of the game football like we play? And that would be a successful. So all in all, for me, I think Oakland, if there was a game plan, which there wasn't, obviously you're not game planning to play terrible mistake football. But maybe their magic is, hey, every time we got to see somebody, let's try to get them in just kind of a Keystone Cop situation football game that nobody really wants to watch.
Who's on first situation?
The energy of the stadium, though, I mean, electric, right? Like, I actually now that I see Las Vegas written like that in the end zone instead of it's really cool. I mean, I was always like, this team shouldn't leave Oakland. They're the Oakland Raiders. And now I'm kind of like, man, Las Vegas Raiders, it kind of is really grown on me quick, like really quick.
I think what we're going to come to, is that how did this take so long? I think a lot of people were very like, oh, that dope team belongs in Vegas. The economy, the amount of people that live there, the way that the cities ran.
Right. And those were all the major fears, I think, for all major leagues, where it's a transplant city, right? Yep. You've got a lot of people from all over the country living there. So you've got 30 other football fans,
right,
cities living in that town. I always said it was about 10 years ago. I think I was even mentioned it doing a podcast, where I always felt that when they started going to the Thursday and Sunday night games regularly, they should have just built a stadium in there, which was the automatic Super Bowl stadium. Now, that would piss off a lot of other cities, but you could have your weekly Sunday night game played on a neutral field or a Thursday night game. And that's when back then I said, go to 17 games. Everybody gets a neutral game, whether it's a Sunday night or a Thursday night, in Las Vegas, because then you're going to bring two fan bases to fill the city.
Yeah.
Good for the economy. You've got the people that are obviously, they eventually went there to bring a football team. But Vegas, the Raiders were the best play. There's no
doubt. I know that they're thinking about putting baseball there. They're thinking about putting NBA basketball game. The WNBA is already there. Hockey's already there.
Hockey's doing really well there.
It is. I don't think it's going to last too long. Any sport comes to a new city and wins a championship, you're going to be doing okay. I think the problem, the benefit of this, the secret sauce in the NFL is you only need to do this 8 times.
Yeah.
So the city of Las Vegas can support this 8 times a year, maybe a playoff game or two.
We're going to have the 8-9. I think is that what it's going to go, because of the 17 games. You'll get 8, you'll get 9, you'll get 8, right, you'll get 9. But yeah, playoff games. They're going to host they're going to be on the Super Bowl rotation.
You cannot have a building of that magnitude and not put a Super Bowl in there. Well, the Super Bowl in Vegas is going to be insane.
Insane.
Period. Period. I will walk to Las Vegas to be a part of what's going to happen when the Super Bowl actually lands there. Like, people think it's going to be cool in LA because that new stadium. No. Vegas is built for the Super Bowl. It's specifically built for debauchery.
Yeah.
It's built for gambling. It's built for prostitution. It's built for nightclubs. Like, it is literally a Super Bowl every weekend.
I mean, imagine if this stadium was around when Lawrence Taylor played. He'd be the fifth best linebacker in the history of the NFL. If that was around then, he wouldn't even be in the Hall of Fame anymore.
No. That would have took a couple years off his career easy. That definitely took a step away from him playing in Vegas.
I mean, a lot of those guys back then in the 80s, I mean, when there was no social media, when there was none of that stuff, boy, they, you know, because now, even if there wasn't a stadium in Vegas, you know, they got to watch their P's and Q's in the last 10 or 15 years. You just can't be out on the town doing whatever you want in any old bar or room or whatever. But good Lord, imagine if there was something in the 80s and 90s in Vegas. The stories we'd be reading in autobiographies today about what happened back then, you know, with guys, it would be hilarious. But
it'd be a picture book.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm excited because for the past handful of years, I'm usually a go-to comedian that the Laugh Factory books on Super Bowl weekend in Vegas for the week, because I do some sports comedy. I've got that kind of, you know, that kind of range to get those kind of fans, you know, aboard that are in town for that weekend. So I'm just hoping that they keep booking me, because that's a free room for me. I could be in town that weekend for the Super Bowl.
That'd be nice.
And that's a free room. So, you know, we always do the show wait until the game's over, which is usually 6:30, 7:30 around West Coast time. And then we get a couple of shows. So theoretically, I could attend a Super Bowl in Vegas and then do comedy that night, which would be great.
What did you, back to the game, what did you think about the Ravens in that game? Because I know you caught the end of it, but for the most part of the game, I thought the Ravens were bad. I really did. We talked a lot about Lamar Jackson taking the MVP next level step because he had a lot of injuries around him. Lamar Jackson was running for his life last night. And I don't think that's going to change as the season goes on. I don't think the Raiders are good. I think the Raiders are either third or fourth in the AFC in the AFC West. I think the Ravens are probably a third place team in that division because that division is tough. You've got Cleveland, you've got Pittsburgh, you've got Cincinnati, who I'm not a fan of Joe Burrow, but he looks like they can score points. So and then you got the Ravens. So I don't know. I honestly don't know what to expect from the Ravens after watching them basically just wet the bed against the Raiders of all teams.
Well, that's why I made the comment yesterday, you know, first place and last place in the AFC North is up in the air. I mean, because really, like you said, like, look, we had the disagreement on Burrow yesterday. I think he's a stud. I think he's going to be a stud if he stays on the field. I think with their schedule, they get better. If no, they already beat the Vikings. If the Packers look like the Packers are going to be the Packers all year, then theoretically the Bengals could sweep the NFC North, right? If they can get
in theory, yes.
Okay.
In theory.
So if they sweep the NFC North, they've got the Texans because they were a last place team. They got Jacksonville. They got Jacksonville because they were a last place team. They've got
the Texans were in last place too.
Okay. Well, there was the same division. You know how they do that. So they have the Jets. That's what I meant. So they have the Jets.
Okay.
They have Jacksonville, who were the last place teams in those divisions. But they also picked up the Texans for that 17th game that they have to fill out somewhere in an AFC opponent. You know, if they can win a couple in their own division, if they could just maybe split with Baltimore, maybe steal one from Cleveland or Pittsburgh, you know, all of a sudden you're looking at a Bengals team that is maybe a 9 or 10 win team, depending on what they can do with the AFC West. Now, they're probably going to get their clocks cleaned by the Chiefs, but if they can compete with the Raiders, if they can compete with the Broncos possibly and get 2-2 out of that division, all of a sudden you're looking, I'm counting 10 wins right off the top of my head right there with the one that they've already got on the box. So Baltimore, you're right. Baltimore is no guarantee, especially with their injuries. We'll see how well they protect Jackson because you can't run him forever.
You
want to, at the end of the day, sometimes I even say, why pressure him? Keep him in the pocket, make him throw from that pocket. You know, a team like the Browns, send Clowney and Garrett on the edge, get a 3 or 4 man rush, no more, and let your linebackers, you know, stay at home in containment, cover tight ends, and be ready to step up and knock him on his butt when he comes up out of that pocket running for his life. So they've got things to address. There's no doubt. And to give a game away like that, like they had won against a, you know, quote unquote, inferior opponent on week one. And, you know, say we want the Raiders weren't doing a lot of things to try to win that game is from what I've read on the synopsis. And then Baltimore just said, we're going to one-up you.
We're going to one up you.
Try not to win this game. It was almost the game of what team didn't want it the most. And then all of a sudden, Oakland. I still say that like San Diego. And then all of a sudden, the Raiders hit that switch and saw that opportunity. And man,
I honestly believe that this was if a game was ever, it's not over until it's over. That's what it looks like. You will put that game in the time capsule when a person goes, they always say in sports, it's not over till it's over. What do they mean by that? Somebody going to show you this game. Because the amount of mistakes that were made, like the throw in the end zone during the game, I think it was Brian Greasy or whatever. I don't know how the hell he got that job, but whatever. He goes, you threw that ball too hard. Like, no, you're supposed to throw the ball hard in the end zone in overtime in the red zone. That's why you're never good, bro. Shut up and they catch the ball. If any receiver will tell you, if it hits my hands, I'm supposed to catch it. The ball goes through this guy's hands, and here we go. Interception in the end zone. It was a comedy of errors at the end of the game. Not to mention the stadium goes bananas when they think they first won the game. When I can't remember this kid's name who catches the ball on the sideline and just fights his way to the end zone, and everybody in the stadium thinks he's in. They're running off the sidelines. Everybody's hugging. John Gruden's slamming his helmet headset. He's smiling. He think they won. Nope, bring it back, bro. Let's do this again. So it was a crazy ending that was, quite frankly, to a really dirty, sloppy game, but it was enjoyable because of the score.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the NBA can or the NFL can offer you. And I'm tongue-tied. The NFL can offer you. That's the great thing about the NFL. It can offer you an amazing finish to a terrible game. You rarely
like no other sport.
You rarely see that in any other sport. You know, you sit there. You're not going to sit through three and a half quarters of just garbage basketball to get down to see if somebody's going to grind out the last possession or not. In right. baseball, you're not going to watch just seven terrible errors of innings, ball teams kicking the ball around to watch a walk-off in the ninth. But football, you're going to sit there and go, you know, who's going to win this football game? You know who's going to get on the winning side? And with the way gambling is so big in football compared to the other two sports, you know, that it has that, you know, what are the refs going to do? What are, you know, even a bad football game brings all that drama. So
the next question is, who's fired? We'll talk about that when we come back. Browner and Lawhead. Second half of the pod, second half of the broadcast of Browner and Lawhead. That's right, boys and girls. The second half is back. You are hearing us on the Mightier 1090 if you're driving in your car. If you're on YouTube and you're watching this thing, you're seeing our lovely faces. Feel free to send us T-shirts, hats, not pictures, but T-shirts and hats. We'll rock them. You already know. I will wear some if you send it. Send Jason some mugs he can drink out of, free advertising, and we get free cups. Always go to the podcast if you're looking for us to listen whenever you want, on-demand listing at the iTunes store. To find us on YouTube and to find us in iTunes or Google Play, all you have to do is type in Kaplan and Crew, and we will be the ones with the date before the title. That's how I try to differentiate us from the big show. So we talked a lot in the first half of the podcast about last night's game, the Raiders winning, quote-unquote, spectacularly against the Ravens, who really choked it away. And we talked a lot about Peyton Manning and Eli Manning doing their own broadcast, which we felt was cool. But something happened yesterday that I don't know if we all saw it coming, but Clay Helton, you ain't got to go home, bro. But you got to work somewhere else.
Yeah.
This was big. This was really, really big. What did you think? And you know what? We'll do some winner losers, because I know we forgot to do winners and losers in the first half. We'll do some winners and losers on who should and who shouldn't get this job.
Okay.
But what do you think about this Clay Helton firing?
Well, you know, it's USC has, you know, in recent memory since Pete Carroll has had a struggle at the head coaching position. They fired Lane Kiffin on a tarmac. And now,
deservedly so.
Right. And Clay Helton is what, 7 years in? Six?
Yeah.
7 years in?
With a winning record, by the way.
Yeah, with a winning record. But, you know, you should have a winning record in college football when you play most of your schedule, you know, anywhere, right? Like, you could have a win. Ohio State had winning records and they fired John Cooper. But you have to put your team in a position to be, I mean, since the college football playoff, where's USC been? I mean, you know,
right.
You know, and at the end of the day, you can maybe survive a little longer in the old days when it was just a national championship game and it was one versus two. And if you finished five or six in the nation, you had a great year, but you weren't being in that consideration and there weren't any Pac-10 title games to maybe save you and get you in the discussion of the top four or whatever. So those days are gone. Those days are well behind college coaches. So you've at a program like USC or Ohio State or wherever, and you know, even Harbaugh was feeling the heat and for a few years in Michigan. And basically based on those answers right there, which is if you can't get us to the conference title,
you've got to win and win big. Winning isn't enough. San Diego State wins.
Right.
What have they won in a bigger picture? They don't. A lot of San Diego State people will tell you, well, we've got a great record against the Pac-10 in the last 10 years. We've been the best football team in California. That's great. What do you have to show for it other than a statistical more wins than losses against Pac-12 teams? Look, man, Clay Helton got fired because it was time for Clay Helton to go. Nobody has a problem with Clay Helton as a person. He wasn't a drunk like Steve Sarkisian.
Right.
He wasn't a jackass like the other guy you mentioned before. Lane Kiffin. He was a cool dude. He was a nice guy. He was good with the media. He was good with the kids. He was good with the university. He was a great recruiter. You got to finish the deal.
Yeah.
You've got to find ways to win games like you lost the other like you lost on Saturday. You cannot lose those games. You've got to beat Notre Dame more times than they beat you. You've got to find a way to get yourself. They've opened the playoff window now so large. Any Pac-12 team that's respectable can get in it because they want you in it. As much as people say, oh, it's SEC, they don't want all SEC teams in there because it's a viewing thing. They want eyeballs from all around the country. And you can't get that if it's some school from Florida and another school from Georgia pretty much the entire damn time. So they right. want Pac-12 teams involved. But USC should be the flagship of the Pac-12. And they haven't. They've been the toilet paper of the Pac-12. And this is not a good look. It was time for him to go. And if you're asking me, initially, the winner in this should be Deion Sanders. Hmm. And I know that sounds insane. I get it. He's doing the thing with the Black Historical Colleges. He's trying to build that up. I get that. This is Los Angeles.
Yeah.
This is Los Angeles. You need somebody who is a star coaching these players. Pete Carroll may not have come there, but he rose to star level. And to meet that star level, you're going to have to now hire a person with gravitas and energy and star power like the person who left it with star power. You cannot hire another guy from Toenail, Oklahoma. Like, you can't do it. You can't do it. You need a big name guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I mean, you know, Deion is, is he ready for that kind of commitment and, you know, workload, just getting his feet wet where he is right now? I think a lot of the reason Clay Helton was also fired was the sense of urgency. Like you said, okay, it's one thing to win football games. Nice guy,
right.
Good recruiter. Just isn't getting the final record done in the last few years, and especially in a conference where you're right, they should be the flagship. And then all of a sudden, now you're looking over your shoulder going, wow, Chip Kelly's got these guys playing down the road. Mm-hmm. And they just beat or LSU. And what LSU, are we what are we doing? We're emptying the stadium in the third quarter against Stanford. And they're across town beating
a down Stanford.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you know, we're getting our stadium emptied out by Stanford. You know, we're getting stomped in the third quarter. It's not like losing to Stanford, you know, in the final plays or in the fourth quarter. It was a hard fought game. I mean, it was 42-10, maybe. I don't know, something like that. So, and what Chip Kelly's been up with. So you've got to say, put a tourniquet on it, because we're going to lose every recruit in Southern California to this guy and or Oregon and, you know, whatever. So, I like the sense of the idea of bringing a Deion in. If he was maybe a little longer in the tooth with recruiting and with running a football program, and maybe he's kind of a guy you watch for a couple of years and see if the next hire is the right guy. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, and I wouldn't call it a terrible hire if they went with Luke Fickell out of Cincinnati, because the AD is a Cincinnati guy. He brought Mick Cronin in to run the basketball program. Cronin got UCLA to a Final Four. But hear me out. Luke is very long in the tooth with what he did at Ohio State as a defensive coordinator. He filled in for the year when they were on suspension before Urban came in between Tressel. He went to Cincinnati. He's made Cincinnati a great program. So a guy that can go there and stand up to the recruiting, and now you're bringing in a guy that has a lot of foothold in that Big Ten country, in that Midwest. I can go recruit now. I know all the high school coaches. I know the area. I can go into Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and get some big offensive linemen. And I can still stay and get the skilled talent out of Southern California. So, I mean, I like the sentiment of Neon Deion if he was a little longer in the tooth right now. But I just don't see USC pulling that kind of a trigger with everything they've been up against.
You may be right with not seeing them doing something of that nature. You're correct. But what I don't want because I watch USC. I'm a fan of USC football. Reggie Bush, thank you. You can't hire somebody. Yeah, the football community may know that. Do people in LA know who that guy is?
Yeah.
You need to hire someone. Because, again, Chip Kelly is about to have that thing rolling.
Yeah.
And you talk about guys being able to recruit in the Midwest. There's enough players in California. You don't ever have to leave it. Everybody gets their star quarterback. Alabama's quarterback is from Southern California. Clemson's quarterback is from Southern California. So the team that we're watching play for national championships are getting their quarterbacks from the backyard of USC. So I need a person who is going to light up the room. And I say Deion Sanders for this reason and this reason only. Deion's not going to try to be the coach. Deion's going to try to be the personality. Mm-hmm. He's going to bring in the right people to coach. And he's going to bring in guys you know. He's going to bring in guys who kids will listen to. And so, therefore, kids who will want to be then recruited to USC. They'll be back to holding kids off of, oh, we can't take this five-star because we got this five-star. We can't take this kid because we got this kid. Bringing in another guy who name recognition-wise is the same as Clay Helton. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what does that do for the headline? Because that you're in the headline business in LA. If you hired that guy to coach North Carolina, cool, that's a good hire. Virginia Tech, West Virginia, Pitt, that's a good hire. You hired that guy to coach UW, that's a good hire. For USC, that's not a good hire, just another dude. They got to stop getting dudes or USC guys, keeping it in. Get rid of all that. It's time to start winning, because if Chip Kelly starts winning games at UCLA, USC football will become an afterthought.
Yeah, I mean, especially with, you know, what you've got. You've got the, you know, the Rams and Chargers in a new SoFi Stadium.
Thank
for
you.
The longest time, USC was the NFL team in that town. And you're right. And you know, you may have actually swayed me with that take a little bit, because when you say, you make the point that Deion's going to bring in the right assistants, he's going to bring in the right guys to make sure that the defense is shored up and the offense is shored up, and then we got a quarterback coach and we got a guy, you know, doing this and that. And, you know, Pete Carroll is, you know, great as an accomplished and proven coach as he is, he's a rah-rah guy. I mean, a lot of his success is based on his assistants, his crew, and he's a
He's an energy guy. He's a pat you on the back, fire you up guy. That's what Deion is.
Yeah, and Deion's that to an umpteen. I mean, Deion's that on you know, creatine fuel. You know what I say? So, like, you know, you may have swayed me a little bit, and it's like, hey, what has worked for us lately, right? Has Clay Helton, has Sarkisian, has Kiffin, has the same old, you know, interview process of, hey, this guy's done this, and here he checks all the boxes. And you're right, this is LA, and it's a different time. It's a social media time. It's it's follow us on these platforms and watch us be exciting. And you know,
and his relationship with Barstool, which is basically fratboy.com for sports, again, another level. You're Deion Sanders. I don't care how much coaching experience he has, he's got the energy and he's got the idea of what modern day coaching should look like. Clay Helton does not. These other guys who are going to come in and try to be the Nick Sabans or the Dabo Sweeneys and do this, like run it like a dictatorship. Get that out of here, man. That's over with and done, man. Yeah. These kids got these NIL deals. They making money now. You got to get somebody in there that's going to get their attention to recruit and to perform on the field. And who's not listening to Deion Sanders?
Yeah, you know, you make a good point. Now that with the ability to make some money off your likeness as an athlete at the college level, what better way to be courted than by a guy that, you know, knows what that's like to go through that. And, you know, knows how to kind of guide a kid along to be like, hey, this is a good decision for you, or this is a bad decision for you. Right. You know, I think when you look and examine Deion a lot, right? Like, you examine him, he's already made a fortune in football and broadcasting and everything he's ever done in life. And coaching is almost kind of a calling instead of a profession, maybe, for him. So he's not the kind of guy that's, you know, lured into the big Lifetime contract. I got to have this, and I got to keep this control, and it's my program, and nobody, right. and run it with an iron fist. Where that could be a successful thing, especially for a USC. It isn't some you're Los Angeles, Southern California, South Central LA. Those types of atmospheres isn't Tuscaloosa, Alabama. It's not Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's not even Columbus, Ohio. So there's a lot of I just don't see. I mean, look, I'm going to
will here, they
now,
do
now,
it?
Now,
no,
now I'm going to agree with you. They should take them, but they're not.
Right. Will USC actually cut the check? Absolutely not. But what you're looking for, that is the level of guy that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about another loser. Let's we talked about a winner because I think Deion Sanders will be a winner from that. Let's talk about a loser. God, the Padres are terrible. They're terrible. You garbage. I'm not calling him Yu Darvish anymore. His new name is Yu Garbage. This dude gave up 5 runs in the bottom of the first. That game was over with before you even sat down. This allowed me to watch the entire Raider-Raven game because this guy literally did not give his ball club a chance. On the mound, I don't know what we're going to do with him going forward because he's had a decent year, but he's absolutely fallen off the map now. And you've got to start firing people. You have to. To finish this season, we've got to know, can we get this team to respond to somebody who's still on this staff, or do we need to clean this whole thing out?
They fired Larry Rothschild. And when you look at, I know it's a smaller sample size, but when you look at the pitching staff since the numbers, since Rothschild's been fired, the scapegoat, the guy that they had, no, we got to fire somebody. So they fired Rothschild, which whatever. I mean, I'm not close enough to the Padres and knowing like whether he was the guy that should have been the scapegoat or not. But all I know is now that I read Buster Olney's column, and I mean, there's pitching statistics since Rothschild's gone. I mean, they're 4 points over their ERA when he was there. They're giving up all kinds of home runs per inning, depending, against they were giving up a lot of home runs, but worse per inning and a smaller sample size. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, who do you fire next? I mean, it's like, if it's not the manager,
that's who you fire. To me, that's who you fire.
You hire Deion?
I would.
Bring Deion in.
He's played.
Run the Padres, get his feet wet.
Dude, ironically,
I mean, he's a baseball player.
How bomb would that be? How he's a legendary baseball player.
Legendary.
You could literally hire him to coach USC and coach the Padres.
That would be great.
It would that oh my you talk about attention getting
he goes from 2-sport athlete to 2-sport coach.
2-sport coach.
Great. Hey, you know what? Today's world, man, anything like that could happen.
You've got to get rid of Chase Tingler.
Yeah.
You, AJ Preller, not so much with me. You just need to let him know the next manager you hire needs to actually know what he's doing, and he can't be some guy you're cool with. You have to hire a guy who has his own chops. You got to pay a guy like Bruce Bochy. But I don't think it's about the money at this point. You got to cut a check for a guy like Isaac Guillen. Guys with World Series rings. We can't bring another guy with a calculator to sit at the end of the dugout and just sub pitchers. Like that, that's really all he's really doing. You can't have that anymore. You need a guy. You need a baseball guy. You need an old guy who scratches his balls and spits in the dugout and tries to fight the umpire when it ain't strikes.
Yeah, and I think that's Tingler's biggest detriment to himself is that he's just too...
Yeah.
I mean, he's in a pennant race fighting for his life right now with a couple of weeks to play, and he gives pressers like it's April. Like,
oh, well, we got another game tomorrow. Like, dude, what?
You don't have that many left.
Break something. I know a lot of people aren't into that. I am. I don't care. I don't want some mild-mannered guy managing a World Series level team basically into a rut. I don't want that. I don't care.
I mean, you don't have to be Earl Weaver, but be Davey Johnson. You know, be somebody that, like you said, will... Yeah, you don't have to flip the table over, but pound your hand on it, you know.
Right.
You know, and I just don't. And I think that's his biggest detriment. And I think another thing that, you know, I'm not making excuses for the Padres. They're professional baseball players. They got to go out and be pros every day. But right. I think what another thing that is detrimental in this last couple of weeks is that they're so far away from the Giants and Dodgers, right? They know they're only playing for the second wild card, okay? And they're so far away that even a win against one of those two teams feels like it did nothing, maybe. Whereas the Reds and the Cardinals, even though they're blown out of the water by Milwaukee, they got each other to fight in their own division.
Right.
The Mets and the Phillies, even though they're distant from the break, they've got each other to fight for that, right? Because these teams could, you know, at least in the East, those teams could still maybe put the pedal to the metal if the leader falls back and possibly win the division or make a run for it, whatever. They're not going to. But the idea of knowing, like, the Phillies and New York are rivals because they're right there, right? Cardinals and Reds, not as big of a rivalry historically, but they're still right there in the same division. And they've got each other to look in the box and say, we're going to beat, we got to beat them. We got to win because we got the Cardinals at our heels. And yes, they know the Padres are there as one of the teams, but it isn't a kind of a sense of urgency, I think, for the Padres being in a division that they're already blown out of with nobody, you know. So when they play the Giants and the Dodgers late in the season, yes, there's a lot at stake. But I don't think, and when you see Tingler take the team onto the field or talk about the team after the game, I mean, you'd think there'd be more kind of just
energy.
Yeah, fight. There'd be more urgency and energy, and there'd be more of this, you know, play spoiler. You get to play the Dodgers and the Giants, be the team that is the reason why that team didn't win the division. You know, be the reason why that team, you know, the Dodgers or the Giants didn't win the division because they lost three straight to the Padres in September. And those three straight wins are the reasons you're a game or two ahead of the Reds or the Cardinals or the Mets or whoever it is. So, you know.
Two shows in. How do you feel?
I love it, man. I want more time. I love it.
We got another hour tomorrow. See y'all. Brown and Lawhead. Peace.
Peace.
Say bye, Jason.
Bye, everybody. Bye, Jason.